Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 300 for January 23rd, 2011. I'm in Victoria, British Columbia as the Victoria Whiskey Festival is winding down. Right now I'm sitting along Victoria's Inner Harbor. The ferry for Port Angeles, Washington left just a few minutes ago, and the float planes come and go every so often across the way. Had a lot of fun with the live webcast from Victoria Saturday, and I hope you were able to listen to the live show. If you weren't, the entire show is available as a podcast as well. Just download episode number 299 from iTunes or the WhiskeyCast website, and you'll be able to hear our live blind tasting that turned out to be pretty educational, as well as a lot of fun. In a few minutes, I'll have some of the highlights of last night's consumer tasting here in Victoria. But first, let's look at the news. Of course, it's brought to you as always by Glenmorangie. The UK's number two leader, Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg, went to Strathyla Distillery in Keith the other day to toast an increase in Scotch whisky exports. According to the Scotch Whisky Association, exports during the first 10 months of 2010 were up 12% over a year ago. Lots of new whiskeys to talk about. Let's start off with Glenfarclas, which is coming out with a special release to mark the distillery's 175th anniversary this year. I caught up with George Grant Jr. of Glenfarclas here in Victoria.
Well, it's a special bottling that we just brought out this year. We put it together at the end of last year. It's a special bottling that's to comprise everything that we have to offer from Glenfarclas. So we've used three casks from the 1950s, three from the 60s, three from the 70s, three from the 80s, three from the 90s, and three from 2000. But the three from the 50s also comprised our oldest cask that we had, which was from 1952. So we now no longer have any 1952 left at the distillery because the last cask went into our 175th anniversary bottling.
And this represents basically how many generations of Grants?
You've got to figure there's going to be three and a half generations, really, of actually, you know, had an input into that whiskey.
When is it available and where is it available?
It should be available now. Orders all came in at the start of the year. It was hugely over-demanded. We did, in fact, sell out from us in a day and a half. It's gone to every market apart from the United States of America.
And that's because of the 750 rule or just because the importer didn't want it?
Both.
How much of a hindrance is that rule to you guys in selling whiskeys in the U.S.?
To sell to the US is very problematic. I mean, it's unfortunately also a problem we're getting in the UK now. We're having to pre-do things for the UK the same as we do for the US. Because obviously the US is a different bottle size, we have to program it in beforehand. And then also with the UK, because of the duty stamp, we have to program everything in beforehand. We need to know how much we're going to be able to produce.
So you're actually facing problems in your home country as well as one of the biggest markets.
Yes, but I mean, a little bit of good news for you, if you like, in the US, we will be bringing out five of the family casks in the U.S. either later this year or very, very, very early next year.
Which ones?
Well, obviously, that's a simple answer, really. We're going to be bringing out 62, 72, 82, and 92, because obviously next year we'll be ending in a 2, so people are looking for a 30, 40, or 50-year-old gift for somebody special. And I'm also thinking about doing 1959, just because I want to do one from the 50s as well.
And let's talk real quickly about the Spirit of Speyside Festival, because speaking of the family casks, you're going to let consumers at the festival this year pick the next one, right?
That's it. The next release is going to be the 1996, and we're actually going to pre-select half a dozen samples, and then the public are going to get the chance to pick which family cask will be bottled next.
And they can find out about that through the Spirit of Speyside Festival site, right?
Yep, www.spiritofspeyside.com. But also just look out for lots of other special bottlings and things that will be available during the festival.
And you have a bunch of tastings going on in addition to the family cask selection, right?
That's right. The first tasting, special tasting I'll be doing is the Royal Tasting. We have a big wedding happening in the UK next year on the 29th of April, which Prince William is getting married, which is also the first day of Spirit of Speyside. So I'm doing a special Royal Tasting. I'll be doing the year that Queen was coronation, the year Diana got married to Charles, at the year that several people were born. So that's going to be an interesting tasting.
George mentioned that the oldest Glenfarclas malts in the warehouse are now from 1953, and look for a 60-year-old expression of Glenfarclas 2 years from now in 2013. By the way, I'll be turning 50 next January, and that 1962 family cask George mentioned would make a great birthday present, in case my family is listening. Aaron Distillery is not nearly as old, just turning 15 years old in 2010. And while Aaron has stuck to a consistent style so far with a lot of maritime and floral notes, there's a different Aaron on the way. Andrew Hogan told me about the first peated Aaron, the Macri Moore.
What we didn't want to do was just create a massive peated spirit. What we're attempting to do is to make the classic Aaron with a slightly peaty twist to it.
And what does the Macri taste like?
Macri Moore is quite a soft, gentle note. It really is classic Aaron, but the briny medicinal notes come to the fore much quicker than you'd anticipate. But what you don't get is a kind of smack in the face Islay-style peat. It is gentle, consistent throughout the palate, and it finishes with a lovely, fresh iodine and briny notes.
What else are you guys working on for this year?
This year we're going to do a 12-year-old cask strength. It's going to be limited edition. We're also trying to build our profile in more of the gift-bearing arenas. So we're looking to create just a standard 10-year-old, but in a high-quality gift box with a couple of glasses in it. So we can kind of crack for the Asian markets in particular, something that looks as a gift and works as a gift is very, very important, and we're just getting into that now.
And of course, Aaron is also responsible for the Robert Burns series of whiskeys, and with Burns Night coming up here in a couple of days, I know that it's been a couple of years now since the gathering and the anniversary of Burns' birth, but are any new fronts, anything new along those lines?
At the moment, we're continuing with Burns Blend and Burns Malt, and it's a really busy time for us because there's so many Burns dinners in Canada alone. I'm doing three this week. I'm doing one in Calgary, one in Edmonton, and one in Toronto. And I know that Ewan Mitchell is doing one in England this week, so it's full on when it comes to Burns dinners. Further down the line, what I would like to do is to upgrade Burns Malt. Much that it's been a success, it is essentially a five-year-old whiskey with no age statement on it. Now, I think there's room to premiumize that and maybe make a 12-year-old Burns Malt that looks better, maybe tastes a bit more full-bodied, because let's face it, when people want to celebrate Burns, it's not really a cost issue. It's all about making the best whiskey that's appropriate for the occasion, and I think we could do more out of this as a distillery.
And the distillery, you've also just announced in the last few days the open day for this year too, in May, right?
Yes, the open day is going to be the end of May this year. Last year was the first year we did it, and it was a huge experiment, a massive learning curve. I think even for myself, because I worked at Brew Atlantic, as you know, and I've got a fair bit of experience with their open day, but the Aaron open day didn't really translate that way. So we learned a lot. We had a huge success the first year. This year what we're going to do is we're going to make it at the end of May, so it coincides with the back end of the Islay Festival. And we'll hopefully pick up a few weary stragglers coming out of Islay, heading back to Scotland or heading back to Europe. And we'll have a fantastic day when it all comes together.
Aaron's open day will be on May 29th. Meanwhile, Friday night I sat in on a blending class with John Glazer of Compass Box. And while he was here in Victoria, his team back in London is putting the final touches on this year's release of Orangery.
It's this year's model, so to speak. It's the annual infusion of fresh orange zest and spice into the whiskey. We do it around January, February, when the oranges that we get in Europe are at their peak.
And you didn't have to deal with the freezing in the orange trees this year in the orange groves that they did in Florida. You didn't have that problem in Europe, so you actually have oranges, right?
That's right, yeah. I wasn't aware there was a Florida freeze this year. That's too bad.
When will it be available?
It'll be available in February. Bottled in February, and it'll be shipping in February.
Now, you mentioned tonight that you're working on a new line of whiskeys. What can you tell me without revealing too much? Since you're known for transparency, what can you tell me?
We're known for transparency, that's true. And at the appropriate time, I will be 100% transparent.
But now you're going to be completely opaque, right?
No. We're working on a new line of whiskeys, which will be, to be honest, it's something I wanted to do 10 years ago when I started Compass Box, but it wasn't the right time. Now we're entering our second decade, and this is going to be something that's going to be another decade-long initiative to change the way people think about a certain type of Scotch whiskey that's near and dear to my heart. And we'll just wait about 6 or 8 more weeks, and we'll have more details.
Well, let's look at the history here. Knowing your history, I'm going to bet this has something to do with single grains, right?
Did you notice?
That's a guess. Okay.
Is it a good guess?
It's not exactly that, but it's a good guess. 6 or 8 weeks, Mark, and we'll talk about it.
Now, when John is ready to tell us just what he's working on, I'll have the details for you. Finally, some sad news to report. Jimmy Johnson, the longtime warehouse supervisor at Kentucky's Buffalo Trace Distillery, passed away on Thursday at the age of 95 after a long battle with cancer. Jimmy spent 42 years at Buffalo Trace, following in his father's footsteps. James Sr. worked at the distillery from 1912 to 1964. Buffalo Trace master distiller Harlan Wheatley was here in Victoria when he got word of Jimmy's passing.
Jimmy was one of the only guy to touch all 6 million barrels made since Prohibition. And he was a special guy, knew all about the warehouses. He was a warehouse foreman for 35 years. He was the second generation, or third generation Johnson's working there at the gift shop. And he's a special guy, and we hate to lose him.
It's been a rough year for you guys the last 2 months with Ronnie Edens first and then losing Jimmy.
We've lost some great guys with great experience, over 120 years of experience between the two of them. And you're right, it was a tough year for that.
Jimmy Johnson's funeral will be this Monday. Our thoughts are with his family and all of the folks at Buffalo Trace. That's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Wanted to thank everyone who entered Isle of Jura's Wish You Were Here travel photo competition. The contest ended on Friday, and I'll have the first prize winners for you as soon as they're announced. The Wish You Were Here contest is sponsored by Visit Scotland, Olympus, and Isle of Jura, in a world of its own. Let's check the emails of the weekend now, brought to you by the Singleton of Glendolen. First off, got a few comments right after yesterday's live webcast. Angelo Veneziano, back home in New Jersey, posted this note on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. Except for the fact that I don't have a whiskey in front of me, I feel like I'm right there. Great sound quality, well done. Will you have excerpts on the podcast? Well, he posted that before the entire live show went up on the podcast feed. Again, you can hear all of yesterday's fun and games in episode number 299. From Toronto, Wendy Harker posted on Facebook, I caught the episode. What a good idea. It sounded like a fun time and a good exercise on individual taste experiences. Thank you, Wendy. And on Twitter, Scott Spolverino chimed in from Scotland during the webcast, listening to the live whiskey cast. Couldn't even see the dram, and I guessed number 3 was a Portwood. Deep color like they described comes from port. Of course, that one was the Balvenie 21-year-old Portwood, but as you heard in the live show, we were nosing and tasting completely blind samples, and my good buddy Lawrence Graham tried to cross us up with a couple of his selections. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned Rickard Soderberg's post on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page, questioning my tasting notes for the first 2 batches of the Beaumont Tempest 10-year-old. He was concerned because my notes listed the ABV for batch 1 at 60% and batch number 2 at 55.3%, while he keeps finding batch number 1 at 55.3%. I tasted batch 1 here in Victoria last year with Beaumont's Jamie McKenzie and caught up with him last night to solve the mystery.
What happened between the sample that we were tasting this time a year ago here in Victoria and bottling time that caused it to change?
Yeah, the sample that we tried that I showed you was a preview sample of Tempest. And in the time between the time that we drew the sample, as we were looking at the prototypes, and the time that the actual expression came to life and was released to the marketplace, the ABV had been tweaked rather slightly as all the casks had been brought together and married together. And it's changed marginally.
So it went from essentially 56 down to 55.3, which is where it's at today, right?
That's right, yeah.
And this change is, it really doesn't make much of a difference, since we're talking 0.7% in ABV in terms of taste or even in terms of alcoholic strength, right?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the mouthfeel, you know, I mean, what we've got with the strength as it is the strength that Ian McCallum, the blender at Morris and Bowmore, has deemed to be absolutely perfect for Tempest. And, you know, it's a very fresh and appetizing expression of Bowmore.
By the way, there's a lot more that Jamie and I discussed about new whiskies coming from Bowmore, Aucantashen, and Glengarry this year. I'll have more on that with Jamie in the next episode. And I think that clears up our little Tempest in a Teapot. I'll be revising the tasting notes on the WhiskeyCast website and the smartphone apps to clarify things a bit. If you have questions or suggestions, as well as feedback on the live webcast, I really do want to hear from you. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the emails of the week are brought to you this time around by the Singleton of Glendullen, 12-year-old Speyside single malt Scotch whiskey that's aged in both American bourbon oak and European sherry oak casks. Let's check out the calendar of events now, brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. Andrew Hogan of Erin mentioned his Burns Suppers that he's doing this week in Canada. One of them will be on Wednesday night at the Kensington Wine Market in Calgary, which will also host a tasting of classic malts on February 8th and a tasting of some very rare malts on the 24th. By the way, that tasting will include the Black Bowmore. The Linköpings Whiskey Expo is February 11th and 12th in Linköpings, Sweden. Woodford Reserve's first Bourbon Academy of the Year will be on February 19th at the distillery in Versailles, Kentucky. You may have seen it listed on the WhiskeyCast website as the 9th. That was a typo on my part that's been corrected. Julio's Liquors in Westboro, Massachusetts, just outside Boston, has its annual Whiskey-A-Go-Go event on February 27th, and Whiskey Live London is March 4th and 5th. There's a full calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla. As I said earlier, the Victoria Whiskey Festival is winding down as I'm recording this. The final event each year is a Sunday night dinner that always has a special theme. Last year's dinner honored the 10th anniversary of Canada's National Whiskey Club, the Companions of the Quake. This year's dinner marks another 10th anniversary. Brook Laddie celebrates the 10th anniversary of its revival this coming May. And Andrew Gray of Brook Laddie will be presiding at tonight's dinner.
We're moving into the second phase of the development of our company. We'll be relaunching the 10-year-old, Brook Laddie 10-year-old, that unfortunately we had to take out of our range a number of years ago because Jim Beam Brands, the previous owners, didn't distill for 6 years. So our own distillation that we distilled in 2001 becomes 10-year-old later this year. And from now on, we will always have a 10-year-old. We're also going to start selling into duty-free as we bring our 10-year-old back, because we will now have stocks to be able to support the interest. Duty-free accounts for about 25% of all single malt sales around the world. And that we haven't been selling in duty-free for all these years. So we're looking forward to that. We've launched the gin, the Botanist gin, which has been distilled by the only working Lohmann still, which is a unique still, type of still. And the quality of the spirit we get from it is superb. And then with a variety of other changes, we're increasing the size of the sales department. And we're starting to invest some money at long last behind our brands. Up until now, we've had to beg, steal, or borrow, and indeed we did all that with the Lohmann still. But it's now ours, and from now on, we will actually have some money that we can invest behind the brands. So that will make a big difference.
What are you going to go into duty free with?
We will go in with the 10-year-old, but we'll also go in with a range that we'll develop exclusively for duty-free. So there's some new products that we're currently developing, but the 10-year-old will be the core product.
Will it be generally available as well, though?
Oh, yes, of course, definitely. So we want consumers who are going through airports to see our main core product. Both in airports and whenever they land and go home or wherever they're going in business. So the 10-year-old will become the focus of the Brook Laddie brand from here on in.
Now another distillery is marking its 10th anniversary in a quieter way. Penderyn Distillery in Wales sent master distiller Gillian MacDonald to Victoria with a special bottling.
It's a single cask edition. It's number 11 from the year 2000. So it's the first year that we actually started distilling Penderyn, and it's the 11th cask that we ever filled. So we turned 10 years old last September, and it's a bit of a quiet sort of hush-hush. We've turned 10 years old. We thought we'd treat everybody to a bit of a release from the original year. So this has been matured only in a bourbon cask. So unlike our other editions whereby we've either finished them in another cask or combined them with another cask, this is literally sort of raw Penderyn, which is just straight bourbon. So it's bottled at 61.2%. There's only 210 bottles of it, and I've smuggled two into Canada, so especially for the show tonight. And yeah, so it's stunning. It's a real crisp, fresh taste. It's got all those real fruity flavours there as well. It's got the apple, the pear, and yeah, it's absolutely stunning. So give it a go.
What else is going on at Penderyn that we should know about?
Well, all sorts. There's always something. We've done a few special editions this year. We've done a Portwood. We're currently debating whether to bring out the Portwood as a main line. It may well happen in the future. We're doing very well. We're selling basically everything that we are releasing from the warehouse, which is excellent. And we're coming up with a few things in the background that in years to come may well come down the pipe, but can't give too many things away.
How much experimenting are you doing?
We're doing a little bit of experimenting. The unfortunate thing is because of the scale we are, I mean, we don't produce massive amounts of Penderyn anyway, so we have to be very careful, and we're very selective, and we're only doing the odd cask here and there, purely because we haven't got a lot of it anyway. So we've got to be very particular about where we're putting our casks and what casks we're using, because we're always at the point of, you know, not nearly running out, but you know, sort of hand to mouth really. So it's all good though. It's going well.
Gillian was kind enough to let me taste the single cask Penderyn. I'll have tasting notes for it later on in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. The 10th anniversary of Tola Barton's reopening is still a couple of years away, but there are a couple of milestones coming this year from Tola Barton. James Robertson brought his baby to Victoria for a master class. He normally handles international sales for Tola Barton, but got a chance to experiment with creating a wine-finished expression. This one, though, has a twist.
The masterclass today involved looking at cask strength Tola Barton from 2006. And then I had a glass of Coombe del Mas Spaniels, which is a red wine, fortified exactly and made exactly the same way as port, but using Grenache. And Grenache is a much softer grape variety than Tarija Nacional, which is what they use for port. So it's less tannic, much more fruit forward. And my feeling was, since port finish, you get port finishes, and that works, certainly with Tola Barton and with other distilleries. So there's no reason why, using the cask from Coombe del Mas, that Tola Barton being put into these casks as a second cask, it should work as well. And rather than using, up until now, we've been using 1993 Tola Barton for the wine finishes, we would use 2006 or 2007, which is brand new Tola Barton, or our new production. And so the next three samples we'd had at the masterclass were taken from the cask, a mixture of casks, and married together from the 20th of August last year, 2010, the 20th of October 2010, and the 20th of December 2010. And the original date for the whiskey being put into the casks was the 26th of January 2010. So you had a snapshot of 8, 10, and 11 months, and to see how the whiskey, the single malt of the 2006-2007, had developed in the cask. And it was remarkable how there was a distinct change between the two, each of those three samples.
And you're getting close to bottling this, right?
It'll probably be bottled, we're now on the 22nd of January, I reckon it'll be bottled in the next 2 weeks.
And go to market shortly thereafter?
Thereafter it'll be in markets where we're dealing with. We've already had Certainly in Alberta, here in BC, the distributors have already put their orders in. Holland, Belgium, France, Russia, and in the UK as well.
What else are you working on?
We have, obviously, a year ago, we bottled our first production from 2004 as aged oak. That's now a year, has been in the marketplace around the world for a year, and we've really seen a huge pickup on it. And from our point of view, that's fantastic, because it takes the pressure off the older stock, like the 93, which has been used as our entry-level single malt up until now. And also, for the consumer and for us, is utilising single malt that we actually produced after we reopened.
What's coming this year besides the Cumbre de Mars?
We've got a couple of single casks, one that's just been bottled, which will be John Black Special Edition number 5 from 1992. It's a sherry cask. And we'll probably do another 70s cask. And we've got a couple of 70s casks that we've identified that should be bottled in the next 3 or 4 months. And then we'll probably do another 60s cask.
By the way, there's also a Chateau Lafite finish coming from Tullibardine later this year.
Back in September, we heard from Patrick McGuire of Tasmania Distillery and Sullivan's Cove Whiskey. And Patrick has made the trip to Victoria this time around. Tell me what you're working on these days.
Well, what we're working on right now is really getting our whiskies out there and getting the name out there. We've actually slowed our production down quite a bit. We've spent the last 11 years producing barrels of whiskey. Some of that now we've got here as a 10-year-old. But as our markets are growing, I'm finding I'm having to spend more time and more money marketing the whiskies rather than production. We're still producing, but I've slowed that down. So right now I'm having a lot of fun traveling around the world doing things like this.
So you still have the basic expressions out, right?
Oh, yes, we do. But what I've done this time is I've brought along one of our French oak port cask expressions diluted to 47% rather than the usual 60%. It's just something I want to do a little bit different to bring to Canada.
And this is something you have the luxury of being able to do being a small distiller. If you decide you want to do something, you don't go talk to marketing, you just decide to do it, right?
Yeah, well, I'm production, I'm marketing, I make the tea. So if I decide I want to do something at a certain percent, that's what I'll do. But this is the first time I've done that for any market. And I just thought, after my experiences in Europe in the last couple of years, I thought, well, I'll draw from that. The inference there was something in between what we've been doing. And I thought, well, let's try it in the Canadian market first, see how we go.
And you are expanding into the U.S. market too as well, right?
Yeah, well, the distributors we have here in Canada have a lot of ties with various people in the U.S. So we're now talking to them about putting our whiskey in 750ml bottles, which is the requirement there. And I'm hoping by Christmas we'll have some of our Sullivan's Cove into the U.S. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's been a long time coming, right?
Well, it has, but it's one step at a time. And I must say, for me, these markets have come on much faster than I ever expected they would. I mean, we're a long way away from everywhere else on the planet. I really didn't think we'd get much beyond Australia for quite some time. So to be here doing this in Victoria, for me, is amazing, and I'm loving it. And apart from that, the skiing is brilliant.
I have a sample of Patrick's new port cask expression, and I'll have tasting notes for it on a future episode of Whiskey Cast. Of course, Canadian whiskeys got their own share of attention, even though many Canadians often overlook their own excellent whiskeys in favor of scotches, bourbons, and other types of whiskey. John Hall of Kittling Ridge Distillery and 40 Creek Canadian Whiskey had a great crowd at his table all evening long on his first visit to the Victoria Whiskey Festival.
Mark, I'm actually working on several different things. Of course, looking at different wood treatments with regards to expressions, different taste expressions. And I'm also looking at the various, as I make the rye whiskey and the malted barley and the corn whiskey, trying different combinations there as well.
How did the Confederation Oak go over? Because I remember being at the distillery a year and a half or so ago when you still had that in barrels and seeing that aging. And I know it pretty much sold out almost as soon as you bottled it, right?
Yes, it did. There was a total of 16,000 bottles. And it was interesting. Once I finally found the trees, they were 150-year-old oak trees, Canadian white oak, and I was able to purchase them. But then I couldn't find a barrel maker, a cooper in Canada. So I had to truck them down to Missouri to a cooper where they naturally air dried for 2.5 years. Had them made into barrels with a medium char and then brought them back, put my whiskey into them. And then after the first year, I tasted it and I thought, oh no. But I was patient. I let it go another year and it was improving. And then the third year was just right. So I bottled it off, introduced it in September, and it's virtually all sold out now.
Is this something you can repeat?
Absolutely. They're brand new. Well, they're made from 150-year-old oak trees. But second round, I'm really excited. I've already refilled them. And it's going to be interesting to see how that product turns out, how that whiskey turns out.
Is it better the second time around because the first time took some of the tannins out?
Yes. The one thing about Canadian white oak, I think it's a perfect example of terroir with regards to whiskey. And it's the same species as the American white oak, but growing in Canada, it grows a lot slower. Therefore, the wood's more dense, a lot more oak extract, a lot more oak tannins. And I think, the first round is just superb. But I think the subtleties that come out in this next round are going to be very interesting.
Now, this is your first time at the Victoria Whiskey Festival. Why did it take you so long to get out here?
Well, it's a long way from Niagara Falls, and I guess it was just one of those things. I was traveling through the United States and promoting 40 Creek Whiskey, introducing 40 Creek Whiskey to people, and it took a while for me to get out to the West Coast.
But your whiskeys are now available all over Canada too, right?
Oh, yes. They're available right across Canada now, and they're in, I think it's about 44 different states, and it's only available in Canada and the United States. I do still get many requests from Australia, from Europe, and from Asia, but I limit myself to North America because I don't want to spread myself too thin, and the demand for my whiskey is continuing to grow, and I don't want to disappoint the customers that are presently buying 40 Creek.
What's the special release going to be for this year?
Oh, wow. That's the $2 million question. I am contemplating on bringing out my Portwood again because it was a very limited edition. It was only 3,000 bottles, and it sold out so quickly, and I felt that I disappointed some of my 40 Creek customers, and I would like to. I've already laid that back down, so that's one possibility, and there's another one that I'm also contemplating on doing. So I'm not quite sure yet which one I'm going to introduce, but I got to narrow it down soon because before you know it, September will be around. So I figure in a couple more months, I'll probably have my decision made.
So it's watch this space time, right?
Watch the space time right now, and I would say in a couple months, and certainly you'll be one of the first to know what it is.
And as soon as John decides on that special release, I'll have the details for you here on WhiskeyCast. Finally, there was an unusual whiskey getting some good reviews. We've heard a lot about those so-called white whiskeys, usually nothing more than new-make spirit fresh off the still, that might have seen a few days or weeks in a barrel, if that much. But Canadian whiskey, like scotches and bourbons, has an age requirement for it to be legally called whiskey. So how do you get a Canadian white whiskey? Guy Thornhill of Highwood Distillers explains White Owl.
It's 8 to 10 years in a barrel, and then it's filtered to take the color out.
Why?
Why not?
Okay, that's fair, but what is taking the color out of it do to it?
What allows it to be used in a lot of different cocktails, and it's an introduction to rye for people that don't like rye. So it's a smooth, mellow flavor. And you can mix it with, you can make a Caesar with it. and you can make a colorful cocktail with it.
But you can also just sit there and sip it too, right?
Absolutely. On ice, it's beautiful.
Where did the inspiration come from for this one?
Inspiration came from Barry Weil. He's the president of Highwood Distilleries. And we thought that the rye category needed something different and new and exciting. So we sat around and we thought about it, and we thought, hey, how about a white whiskey? And we said that couldn't be done. But it could be, so we done it.
How long did it take you guys to get it right?
It took us 3 years to do it. 3 years to get the filtering process worked out.
What does the filtration take out of it that makes it so smooth?
Well, the challenge is to take the color out and leave the flavor in. So it once it's been in 8 to 10 years in the barrel, it's smooth already. Once it's filtered 4 times through charcoal, it becomes really smooth.
While I don't have tasting notes for White Owl yet, my initial impression is that it's very smooth, quite rich, with good rye notes. I'll have tasting notes for it on an upcoming episode. So what did I wind up tasting? Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with Penderyn's Bourbon Matured Single Cask from 2000 that Jillian McDonald told us about. It's bottled at 61.2% ABV. The nose is full of vanilla, dark chocolate, allspice, roasted almonds, and nutmeg. The taste is spicy and mouth-coating with black pepper and cilantro notes that fade to reveal brown sugar, sweet maple, and dark chocolate. The finish is long and lingering with just a touch of soft spices. It's excellent. I'm scoring the Penderyn Bourbon Matured Single Cask a 92. During the live webcast, we met Noel Buckley of the West Coast Whiskey Society in Vancouver. Now, this is a show where some of the most interesting whiskeys are not part of the official program, but get shared among friends. And Noel was kind enough to share some Laphroaig 40-year-old with me last night after the webcast. It's the first time I'd had the 40. This bottling was at 42.4% ABV. And the nose is muted with soft peat, heather, gorse, and hints of brine. However, the taste is peaty and bold, full of smoke and fire that fades to ashiness with a sweet touch of caramel. The finish is lingering and ashy with touches of smoke and salt water. Just an outstanding whiskey, and I'm scoring the Laphroaig 40-year-old a 96. Thanks again to Noel Buckley for letting me taste it. I should point out you may be hearing some sirens behind me. We do have a couple of fire trucks out in front of the hotel here. Nothing major. Looks like an ambulance is pulling in. It seems like somebody here at the hotel is having a health problem. We hope it's not serious, and it should be cleared up pretty soon. Now, Victoria is not very far away from Seattle, which is the home of the Costco warehouse store chain. And here's another one of those really unofficial whiskeys. You may have heard about this one, and I finally got the chance to try it. It's a bottling that pops up at Costco from time to time, the Kirkland-branded bottling of 18-year-old Macallan. Needless to say, this one does not have the Macallan's official blessing. It sells for about a third of what the Macallan 18-year-old goes for, and the quality reflects that. The nose has dried fruits, sweet oak, nutmeg, and brown sugar. The taste is peppery, yet still a bit sweet, with a caramel note as the spices fade, along with orange peel and a touch of brandy. The finish is tart with a brandy note and fades quite quickly. Overall, it's not nearly as well-balanced or smooth as the official Macallan 18 bottling, since it comes from casks that were intended for blending and sold to brokers, never intended to be bottled as a single malt. But that's how it got to Costco in the first place. It's not bad, but it's not that good. I'm scoring the Kirkland 18-year-old distilled at Macallan a 77. Now, I'll be adding a lot of notes to the WhiskeyCast website over the next few days, along with the smartphone apps. The iPhone and iPad app is sponsored by the Glenrothes, and the Android version is sponsored by Ben Romick. You'll also find links to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed at the WhiskeyCast website, along with the calendar of events, my photo gallery, the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. Once again, special thanks to Lawrence Graham and all of the Victoria Whiskey Festival volunteers for their hospitality this weekend, along with the staff of the Hotel Grand Pacific. This is really one of my favorite whiskey events every year. If you're thinking of coming next year for the 2012 Victoria Whiskey Festival, check the festival's website for details on ticket sales next November. They sell out in minutes, and the website address is www.victoriawhiskeyfestival, all one word, .com.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you this time around from beautiful Victoria, British Columbia. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly, and thanks for listening.